As we board committee, on behalf of all our people here, our subsistence lifestyle is so real and unique that it should be respected and appreciated by everyone. And I can't tell you how important education is to us. Our school building is still on floodplain. Our school has 55 enrolled students and it has four small classrooms. We don't have enough teachers or teachers' aides for that many students. We don't have a special ed program or a preschool program. Finally, we need the RSVP. We have great rewarding outcomes from our students who get a chance to work and experience real city jobs. They're assured that they can survive and support themselves. Please don't eliminate or cut these programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Linnez Vietas?
She isn't here right now. Hold on. You can go on to the next one.
Samson Henry?
My name is Sam Henry. And I'd like to talk a little bit about ATC or adult public assistance. What little money we get, or the people get here anyway, is that even pay for their food or their power? Like my wife said earlier, the diesel fuel is 50 a gallon, and $3 for gasoline, and $7 for a quart of oil. And really cut into their, what little money they get. And there's no jobs here in the villages, or any villages, hardly any jobs in the villages. So we really need these, and a jobs program, and the summer jobs for the kids where they learn how to work, try to get on their own. There's a PCE. My wife said we had to pay quite a bit to, for our life the last winter, last month, or month of January. It really cuts into, that gets right into that ATC or adult public assistance. One of the guys have to pay about $300 some for 1 month light bill, and then that's their whole month's assistance. All of these cuts shouldn't be cut. I think we should be looking for some other direction for cuts or something like cuts in overseas. Yeah, I think we should be looking at cuts in rural villages. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. Is Gilbert Vent there?
IEP for the kids that work, do summer work here is very important for them. They're the backbone, they're going to be the backbone of this village one of these days, and they need to know everything they could possibly. Also on the AFDC, the adult work program, that's a big help here in the rural villages. Be cut at all.
How many people in Juneau do you think actually listening? Do you think you're talking to empty speakers?
Are you done, Mr. Vent?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Then you heard what I said earlier, right?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I think he believes there's nobody else listening, and we are.
Oh, no, there's a number of people here. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's about 10 representatives down here, a number of people in the audience, and there's people all over the state as well listening.
Okay, thank you. Also, on PCE, we definitely need that. We're in help with the light bill and fuel bill and so forth.
$1,000 per person per capita. It's actually closer. When I was the Coast Guard 77, we had 12 people.
Someone's cutting in on us here.
Yeah, we've got somebody speaking over Mr. Vent. Mr. Vent, did you want to finish your comments?
Yes, I was talking about PCE. It's very important for us here because of the income we have in the villages. And we need we need most of the help we can get at all times.
Government agencies like this, they knock them down to about 50.
That's all. That's all. Nutrition programs and
creating jobs.
Mr. Vent, could you hold on for just a minute? Obviously, there's somebody we can hear talking about $1,000 per capita per person, and things are bleeding in at times about that. So someone's on their mic, I guess, and it's bleeding across. Mr. Vent, go ahead.
All right, I was just talking about the interest in nutrition program. That's very important here at Allegheny.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Vent. Could we go to Homer and Mr. David Stutzer?
Hey, this is David Stutzer from Homer. Thanks for finally hearing my testimony. I've been here for about 3 hours. I guess just to begin, I question the wisdom of having a four-hour hearing on a bill that is this broad with as many people. I've seen a list of people waiting to speak, and I'm sure some of them have waited as long as I have. So I don't know how to do it any differently. I'm sure you're getting kind of tired of hearing the same stuff. At any rate, I'll proceed with what I wanted to bring to your attention.
Better hurry, because I'm going to really say something stupid if you don't get here.
All right, well.
Mr. Stutzer, I don't know if you heard, we're having somebody who's bleeding across onto our network. Go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, well, stupid comments can be made by whoever's on the air. I'd like to speak of several issues. That's why I'm waiting so long. I'm a staff volunteer at KBBI here. I'm a strong supporter of public broadcasting, and I think it's been said many different ways already today that it's a very important service that's provided to the public and should be funded by the public. Public broadcasting has a lot of members. However, there's a large listenership that are not members, and therefore I think that their monies in the form of state tax dollars should be used to fund public broadcasting. I'm also a supporter of the arts. I think it's also been illustrated and examples made how arts, funding of the arts also has impact on school grades, SAT scores, the quality of life, and so forth and so on. Third thing I'd like to address is the Department of Natural Resources budget. Division of Forestry was brought up. If you don't fund them, there will be no oversight on the Forest Practices Act. Things will be done willy-nilly, and if violations occur, there's no funding to keep tabs on the violations and or enforce the regulations that are in force right now. And you can cut the stuff. Stuff will happen, the results will be more expensive for all of us than leaving the funding as it has been, or perhaps even increasing the funding. Also, the Department of Natural Resources, the Division of has received a cut from the governor's budget, and they have also at the same time have had an ongoing program receipt that they are allowed to keep a certain percentage of those receipts. Last year, they had a $126,000 deficit in their budget. At the same time, they raised $2.1 million in user fees, of which they were only allowed to keep something under $2 million, and in effect had a $155,000 excess that they actually collected that they were not allowed to keep, which would have covered their deficit and then some. So my recommendation to you is that you restore their funding this year to the governor's original level and seriously consider removing the cap on their program receipts so that they can be a self-funded agency. Of course, the long-term goal would be that they would be totally self-funding. It'll never happen unless you remove the cap from their program receipts program, the cap on their collection of user fees. I think in general, the stuff that I've heard today, people calling in on what they would like to have funded, there is no more fat in this budget. I've been on the CASMED Bay Parks Advisory Board for 10 years. Every year, the budget for the Division of Parks has taken a cut. Every year, visitor usage has increased. This doesn't make sense to keep cutting. Somewhere, the funding has to be increased, either through the use of the budget reserve, through tapping of the permanent fund, or the reimposition of a state income tax. It takes courage, as one fellow from Juneau said, and that's what I'm here to encourage you to do. It takes some political courage to take the steps to increase the funding, and you are the representatives of the people of Alaska. You are here to do what we request of you, no matter how tough that may be, no matter whether that means you get elected or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stutzer. Carol Standard, and we're going to have to try and keep people to their time because it's going to impact others as well.
Carol has left because she could not wait any longer.
Okay, Walter Johnson.
Yeah, this is Walter Johnson speaking on the public radio. I think if we need to make a choice between radio and television, I would like to speak in favor of the radio. You know, oral communication is something that we've used since the beginning of mankind, and it still works. And if we wanted to do something to preserve the culture of the outlying areas, I think that the radio is just more cost effective. The other thing is the question of tax. When we go into the store and buy something, we either have to go buy and pay for it or steal it. And I think if we're going to continue to talk about services, maybe we should just provide a way of paying for them or stop talking about them. I would suggest that you look carefully at what former Governor Hammond has proposed in the way of tax and structuring it so that it takes it a bit easier on the residents and does capture the salaries that are being collected by many people who work here. So I just say that I think public radio is very cost effective, and it's the one thing that makes life in rural Alaska entirely different than it was 50 years ago, and a lot better. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott Wheat?
Yes, thank you. This is Scott Wheat, and I want to just say that I do support the public radio. It's been a real help to me here in Homer. But I'm primarily here today to talk about the adult public assistance cuts and the Medicaid cuts. The Medicaid cuts particularly are difficult to accept because of the matching grants that come from the federal government. So I'd like to support the governor's proposed budget for the APA and the Medicaid and foster care. I think that the numbers for public assistance will show increased growth, and to not stick with the governor's budget is to just ask for supplemental funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I'd like to go to Sitka and Marion Allen.
Yes. I was going to switch places with Dan Salvi, but after he waited for 2 hours, he had to leave. And because he is a commercial fisherman and he just couldn't take that much time off. But I did want to urge you to, I know you're going to get a stack of written testimony because of the long line waiting to hear from people, but I did want you to urge you to listen to read his testimony. I'm disappointed that the funding for AMSI has been cut out of the governor's budget. I am a former fisher and I'm an AMSI instructor. Several years ago, I taught a class in one of the villages. A while after that class, a fisherman who'd been in it lost his boat. Later on, he told me that the training he had in that class had made the difference between surviving or not for both himself and his crew. In talking with the helicopter pilot who rescued him, he reaffirmed the fisherman's belief, saying that because of the weather, anything going wrong in that situation, those people would have lost their lives. In another class I co-taught, Some of the fishermen subsequently were involved in rescuing some other people, and they also communicated back that the training that they had received had made that rescue go smoothly without injury or loss of life, and they could see that it would easily have gone the other way if they had not had that preparation. I'd also like to note that I do a lot of training of children as well. Without ANSI, and that's probably what we're talking about, if the state doesn't come through with some kind of support, I would probably have to stop teaching classes, as with many other instructors around the state. We rely on ANSI for equipment, which is very expensive to buy, and it's also expensive to maintain. And ANSI keeps us up to date on information as well as new equipment and changes and of things that go on in our field. We would find it very, very difficult to do this on our own. If ANSI disappears, slowly this training will also disappear, and then the drowning rate will go back up again. I'd also like to know that these stories that I've told you, I mention them because I'm not unique. There are many instructors around the state who can tell you stories very, very similar to the ones that I told you. ANSI is a program that not only saves lives, but it does it for very little money. It seems to me to be the kind of program that the state should encourage to continue and perhaps even learn from because it is so efficient. You can restore funding by passing Alan Osterman's HB 366, and this would earmark 50% of the interest of just the interest on the Fisherman's Fund for ANSI. This would reinvest Fisherman's Funds back into the industry and at the same time help everyone in the state. And it would make many Alaskans thankful in the future when they don't lose their lives in adverse situations on the water. And thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Marianne. Colette Casavant?
Yes, this is Colette Casavant. I'm also testifying on behalf of Cheryl Nelson, who had to leave. Domestic violence has hurt many women and children in my own life. These Alaskans deserve a life free of violence. If we want to stop future and current violence, we need the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault to be fully funded. Thank you for saving the lives you have. Please help save more.
Thank you. Is Marilis Tedden there?
No, we have two other people here to testify, and that will be it for Sitka.
Okay, why don't you go ahead with whoever's next, if they could identify themselves.
Hello to the council members. My name is Kathleen Lyons, and I'm here to support the safe shelter and urge you not to cut the funding for domestic violence shelters in Alaska. As long as violence against women and children continues to exist in our culture, we need the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault to be fully funded. Help the shelters go out of business years from now by funding them now and teaching children nonviolence in the shelter's children's program. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. And who's the last person there in Sitka?
My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm here on behalf of some of the residents in the art community concerning the cuts in funding for the arts. I believe that most of the things that go on in this state are preventative kinds of things, and I think the arts councils and the arts communities that revolve in this state have a great deal to do with preventative medicine, as it were, in keeping our cities healthy. And there are very many people in Sitka who are very involved in the arts and would all greatly appreciate perhaps not as much money as once came in, but zero funding for the arts would be a large mistake for Alaska.
Okay. Thank you. If we could go back to Anchorage and Ronnie Sullivan.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here to speak on behalf of Emergency National Services France. EMS is a program which supports, trains, and assists ambulance and first responder services across the whole state of Alaska. 65,000 people enter the healthcare system through EMS every year. Nearly all of our work is done with volunteer agencies. We're in dire need of an increase to our budget lines. During the past year, we've seen a tremendous decline in the number of services and the level of care that they're able to provide in their own community. 20 ambulance and first responder services have shut down completely. 17 more have decreased the level of services that they're able to provide. That's 20 communities in this state in which no one remains to respond to a call of someone who's injured or ready. If we don't get a much needed infusion of funds, I'm afraid we're going to continue to see a decline in this important program. As citizens of Alaska, we all have the right to expect a rapid and skilled response if we're ill or injured. Volunteers continue to be willing to do the work and not ask for any pay. How can we not continue to support their needs in areas such as training? Watching an enthusiastic volunteer service fail because we can't keep them trained and equipped is very similar to watching a person drown because they don't know how to swim. My hope for each of you is that if you need EMS, where you live, or you work, or you go for recreation, that the service will still be there to help you, and that the same can be said throughout Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Joanne Welsh?
Yes, my name is Joanne Welsh, and I work for Alaska Public Lands Information Center, and I'm addressing the cuts to the Division of Tourism, the elimination of funding to the Alaska Public Lands Information Center by way of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. I'm going to use the acronym APLIC for Alaska Public Lands Information Center. I figured that'll cut a minute off my testimony right there. I'd like to speak about the people who use the APLIC. I'd like to talk about money, and I'd like to talk about kids. Each year, 15,000 people phone and 9,000 people write to the Anchorage APLIC. Many of those inquiries are from out of state and foreign countries. These are individuals and families deciding or preparing to come to Alaska. The APLICs are the only agency offering comprehensive and personalized statewide trip planning. This is an important service which successfully markets Alaska and actively brings visitors to the state. Economically, each visitor to Anchorage contributes $315 to $574 per person to the Alaskan economy. And that's according to the 1993 Alaska Visitor Survey. For the 24,000 inquiries volleyed by the Anchorage APLIC, that's about $8 to $14 million. And assuming just 50% of the letters and phone calls are out of state, the others are local, that's still a possibility of $4 to $7 million brought into the state. And that's not a bad investment for a contribution of $70,000 by the state to the operating budget of the Anchorage APLIC. In addition, 100,000 clients walk through the Anchorage APLIC's doors annually. That's about 1 out of every 10 visitors to Anchorage. Assuming one half of those clients are independent travelers from out of state, that's a translation of averages $6.7 million. Again, those figures from the 1993 Alaska Visitor Survey. Well, whether we're talking about residents or out-of-state visitors, I'd really like the legislature to reconsider the funding for APLICs and the investments they make as far as the Alaskan economy.
Thank you, Ms. Welsh. Cecilia McSherry?
She had to leave. Next, we have Tom Murphy.
Has Sandra Wicks is gone as well?
Yes.
Okay. Tom Murphy, then?
I'm Tom Murphy, Executive Director of Alaska Dance Theater, located at 2602 Campbell Street, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity of speaking to you today. Before I begin my remarks, I have two very quick things to say. One is, I am an avid supporter of public radio, and I do hope that you will reconsider the cuts in public radio. Secondly, I was encouraged last night to receive a telephone call from a UAA theater student to remind me of today's meeting. She and five other UAA students were here this morning. They stayed here, in fact, for about 2.5 hours. They had a performance at noon and had to leave. I would like to address briefly one aspect of the elimination of the Arts Council, and that is the impact of the children on the state, in the state. Alaska Dance Theater itself has 500 dance students and a performing dance troupe. I would like to list a small number of the many arts organizations which are served by the Alaska State Council on the Arts and, in turn, serve the children of our state. The Dance Theater Fairbanks Children's Theater, the Native Dance Troupe statewide, which trained children, Ketchikan Ballet, the Anchorage Community Theater Children's Workshops, Homer Tier 1 Theater, Children's Theater Camp, the Anchorage Junior Symphony, Anchorage Junior Theater. The whole list would include almost every group, every arts group in Alaska. Children and young people involved in the arts are rarely involved in delinquent activities. The $500,000 plus that you put into the arts is a small price to pay for wholesome, to provide wholesome activities and events for our statewide youth. And that, of course, does not speak to the majority of the adults who are involved in some aspect of arts in Alaska. One of the young women who was here when she, earlier that I mentioned, of the six, is a theater major. She had to leave early, and I've taken the opportunity to write a bit of doggerel that was inspired by this young lady, and I will be finished here in a moment. Jenny patted me as she left and told me, "Knock 'em dead. So say you'll show that you are not, that you are deaf. So say you'll say your, so say your reasons haven't fled. So say you're just not. So say you'll not leave arts bereft, because Jenny told me, knock 'em dead."
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Robert Sloan?
I have the lead. Next, we have Jerry Dugan.
Jerry Dugan.
Thank you, gentlemen and ladies on the committee. I'm disappointed on hearing that the budget for the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, or AMSI, was cut completely out of the governor's budget. It'll probably mean the end of a truly unique grassroots Alaskan solution to an Alaskan problem, drowning in marine safety. As I've trained tens of thousands of Alaskans through the use of local AMSI instructors, AMSI has put Alaska on the map internationally as a place to learn about marine safety. People come to Alaska from all over the U.S. and from other nations. Alaskans have been offered themselves, however, affordable but high-quality training. And again, this has led to the 50% reduction in fishing fatalities in the last 3 years. It's also resulted in the saving of at least 40 other lives. Many AMSI instructors have gone on to start their own businesses. But the loss of AMSI will result in more people having to actually leave the state for this training. Eliminating a budget for AMSI, to, as I mentioned earlier, is a penny wise but a pound foolish take. The way to restore funding, and that is by this finance committee hearing and passing Al Osterman's House Bill 366. I ask this committee to be categorically responsible for where this money comes from and reinvest this very small amount to drowning prevention in Alaska, a state, by the way, that has the highest drowning rate in the nation. The AMSI's use of in-kind and community resources is a model of cost effectiveness. If state government was run this effectively, there would be no budget shortfall, either real or imagined. I ask you to set a good example of fiscal responsibility by not sending a cost-efficient and highly effective program down the drain. You can do this by supporting this program, which is important to people all over the state. Thank you and the LIO for making this opportunity possible.
Thank you. I believe next we have Mr. Raybong, Andy Raybong.
She had to leave. Next is Nancy Meisler.
My name is Nancy Meisler. I'm the president of the Alaska Association for Community Education, which is the state organization representing community schools. What I'm here for now is to talk to you about the governor's recommendation to cut community school funding by $100,000. I know that doesn't seem like a lot when you're dealing with budgets 10 times that amount, but over the years, community school funding has been cut by 85%, and another $100,000 at this time would probably have a devastating effect. 52 out of the 54 school districts in Alaska are receiving state grant funds for community schools right now. The smallest award is less than $2,000. But that money has turned around, and throughout the state, community school funding is not only matched by local funds, but leveraged into a program valued at over $3.5 million. If the state pulls its support of community schools, local support would go right along with it. State grant funds, private funds, without it, there would be nothing left. I urge you to take a look at the fiscal year report compiled by the Department of Education. I think you'll see how community schools provide opportunities for all people in the community, parents and non-parents, preschoolers through senior citizens. I also think that most of the key issues that concern you the most, crime, jobs, taxes, education, welfare, senior citizens, that community schools are the most cost-effective way to have a positive impact on those concerns. There are six strong components to community ed and community schools, but what it all boils down to is lifelong learning and community involvement. Community schools open up our school buildings beyond the regular school day for programs and activities for youth and adults. By providing the means for these opportunities, we are keeping our communities involved. When our community is more involved, we have a stronger, safer, and more caring community. Right now, you have the power to keep those doors open. Community schools and community education is not just an idea, it's a concept that works. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Betty Bartels there?
Betty Bartels. I'm the Jobs Program Director for the Superman Tribal Council, charged with administering the tribal grant for a total of 1,475 Alaska Native recipients that reside within the Kukanet region. Our offices are located in Anchorage. Representatives of the House Finance Committee, Mr. Chairman, I stand referring to request for consideration as a reinvestment proposal that matched tribal grantees at a 40% level. This request for a match, as submitted by the Governor and the House Health and Social Services Department, was eliminated by the House Finance Subcommittee Preliminary Budget for DHSS. Secondly, the only line item in 10, not eliminated but reduced drastically, was the child care component. Both of these items are of great importance to our organizations, not only for the tribal grantees, but the state agencies as well, that would allow recipients and clients who utilize our services to pursue, attain, and maintain their employment components. CITC child care programs late last year closed due to a lack of money. We had up to 60 people on hold whose request was for child care. The allocation for Hook and the Tribal Council is $285,000. This is a federal share only. To date, only 75% of this amount was received due to Washington, D.C. and FIMP not being able to cast a budget and continued operations by continuing resolutions. With this amount, we receive on average 125 clients per annum. Our program employs three people who are proficient in working with clients who have many challenges. Roughly about half of our clients are in pursuit of education. It has been our experience that by and large the clientele we work with in order to become self-sufficient and meaningful contributing members of society must elevate their skill level. Unless they are driven this opportunity, we face many clients at risk of cyclical behaviors. By investing these savings back into programs that have documented proof of reducing welfare dependency and success in assisting our clients to become self-sufficient, caseloads of AFDC recipients can be further reduced. If we prepare our clients with a good base and do our jobs right the first time, we won't see them on our doorsteps again. Your doorstep, the Department of Public Assistance doorstep, the job program doorstep, and I might add, the options we offer will reach further to break cyclical behaviors that have been nurtured and instilled in the past. Respectfully, thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Is Ed Brower in Thorn Bay still online? Mr. Brower? How about Herman Morgan in Antioch?
Oh, yes, sir. This is Herman Morgan from Antioch, and I'd like to testify on the House Finance Committee's proposal to cut $70 million from the state budget. And my testimony is directed at Mr. Hannity and Drew Pierce and others who are advocating the structured budget cuts. I understand the need to have a balanced budget, but you guys are going too far. You guys are only advocating cuts, and not looking enough on ways to raise revenue. It seems like you guys don't even have a care on how many people you're hurting. You remind me of that robot in the Terminator bent on only one thing with no human emotions, no caring. You won't even give the voters of Alaska a chance to vote on whether or not to reinstate the state income tax. You're telling us you know what's best for us, only budget cuts. Your lifeman won't go up to $150 or more a month if they do away with the PCA program that has ruined Alaskans. You're not in danger of losing your job because of these cuts. What I'm trying to say is you should show a little more compassion towards your fellow human beings in Alaska. For instance, you're planning on cutting $200,000 from the subsistence division. Right now is a critical time to protect subsistence in Alaska, but the federal government is trying to take over management of fish and game. And on education, too, I think education should do its share to balance the budget. Because if these kids graduate, they'll have a diploma, but they'll have no jobs because there's so much budget cuts. In conclusion, I ask you, Mark Handley, Drew Pierce, and some of the others to stop and consider the implications of your strategy of only advocating budget cuts to balance the budget. Look at more ways to raise revenue to fund important programs. A lot of your proposed cuts are needlessly hurting your fellow Alaskans, especially the PCO program and Social Services Division and others like River Sharing and Lifting Assistance. true to you, but sometimes it seems like your mind, you're already made up, you're already bent on making these cuts, no matter how many people are hurt, you're bringing the same lawsuit back to the dark ages. You're not looking for ways to raise revenue, like capping your permanent fund or state income tax. You're looking at cuts, and this has gone too far. You come to the point, it's like where you're throwing the baby out in the bathwater. And if you got your majority of your legislators on there are only interested in making cuts and not just that waste more rate revenue, maybe you can get somebody else down there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Galena Dean Girash. Dean, are you on? How about Marilyn Duggar in Nanana?
I believe Nanana is offline.
Okay. How about John McIntyre out of Bethel?
Mr. Chair, I'll be a participant of WEF, and I'll be sending written testimony in.
Okay. Thank you very much. if we can go back to Dillingham, Wendy Fladdick.
Good afternoon. My name is Wendy Laddick. I'm the chairperson for the Friends of KDLG group for KDLG Radio in Dillingham, and I serve as a volunteer. If you had a chance to watch the 38th Annual Grammy Awards this year, you probably heard Bobby McFerrin and Richard Dreyfuss make the plea to over a billion people in 172 countries to help keep the arts alive. The gist of their message is that arts help create a well-rounded mind that gives us the creativity and imagination to help solve our social and political problems. The 1996 budget is a serious problem, but I believe making a serious cut to public radio and television is not part of the solution. I believe the answer is in trying to come up with ways we can more efficiently pay for the broadcasting system we now have. Because of dwindling funds in Dillingham at our local radio station, KDLG, we are trying to be creative. We have started up a group to provide support by becoming a community and regional advisory board to assist the station in local programming. One way we hope to help is by organizing a cadre of volunteers to help keep the programming alive and well by using local talent on the air to do their own shows, playing the music that they love, be it polka or classical or rock and roll. This can help local radio stations become very cost-efficient and keep public radio alive. So please, give us a chance to step in and help to see if we can make a difference. Year to breathe, as stated earlier. And in closing, I wanted to say we raised $50,000 of our own money to help assist our radio station last year. Our listeners do support our station here financially in Bristol Bay. So when the legislation session is out, you deserve a break. You come to Dillingham. We have some of the best fishing in the world. And while you're here, you tune into KDLG Radio.
Thank you very much. We do have Bob King down here in Juneau as part of the governor's office, who you all know very well. Is Ginger Baim there?
Ginger has to leave. However, I have one more question. Greg just testified.
Greg Burton?
Hello, this is Greg Burton. I'm a citizen of Dillingham. I'd like to speak in support of funding for public broadcasting, and I'd also like to comment on where I think the money should come from to pay for that funding. As you all know, we rely on, in particular, on our radio station in Dillingham for news from the world and also from around the state of Alaska. But I'd like to emphasize how important it is to the community, the local community here. I feel that the radio station is the glue that helps hold this local community together. It helps us get messages out to people who may be in the bush hunting, or they're out fishing, and they don't have access to a telephone or other means of communication. It helps us with public service messages so that we know when we need to get together with our city council or volunteer groups for the radio station or school district meetings or come to the LIO, the Legislative Information Office, and speak to you to let our needs be let you become aware of our needs out here. Additionally, another way that KDLG in Dillingham helps hold the community together is that we have an increasing amount of the local Yupik language programming, which I feel is very important to helping maintain a sense of community here. So those are just a few of the ways that the local radio helps us in this community, and I'd ask that you not cut the funding for public broadcasting or for radio.
Thank you, Mr.
I'd like to continue, if I may.
Go ahead.
There, you have to pay for this somehow, and it's senseless for us to ask for all these services without agreeing to some way to pay for the services. And speaking for myself, I am willing to accept a cap on the permanent fund dividend. I am willing to participate in a reinstated state income tax if that's necessary, but these services need to be maintained in the rural communities of Alaska, and any way that the state legislature sees fit to provide the funding for that, I will support it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. If we could go to Petersburg and Cindy Lynn.
Yes, thank you very much. I'd like to address children's issues as being a pediatric nurse as well as a mother of a disabled child and a member of KidPAC. As far as developmental disabilities and mental health money, if the money from the Harborview closure could be transferred to community base, that would be a good thing. I respect the fact that by closing the center, we're acknowledging that disabled people should be integrated in their communities. However, monies to enhance that integration as far as family support and job placement need to be there. In cutting administrative positions, I think we need to be careful in determining if those administrators are paper pushers or actual service providers. Many administrative positions, these people are actually in the field doing work. As far as the budget for programs, if we could look at how many monies are used for direct services as far as respite. For example, I'm concerned in the fact that many agencies are going to Juneau and Anchorage and giving 800 numbers to the rural communities. One airfare ticket and hotel reservation could give one family 100 hours of respite. In the area of child care, please continue to provide quality child care and finance training, child care subsidies, and the nutrition program. Most daycare centers are running in the red. They have a high turnover of staff, and those staff are paid minimum wages. And within the system also, I saw very large figures on eligibility determination. Within these systems, if we could review the eligibility requirements and possibly use those monies for direct services. In funding child services in general for our state, there is a trickle effect of not funding these programs and not giving needed family support. Without proper funding, in the long term, we see a high percentage of unemployed disabled people. They are the highest unemployment rate in our country. We see a high amount of institutionalization, juvenile crime, and drug and alcohol use. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is Pat Hindy there, or is it Hind?
She had to leave. We only have one more testifier here.
Okay.
Everybody else had to leave. Larry Roberts is here.
Okay, if Mr. Roberts could go ahead.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to comment. I'd like to address the concerns of local public radio as well as TV funding that the House Finance Committee is considering. We are concerned about the drastic reductions in Alaska Public Radio and Broadcasting Commission, and especially how it would affect our local public broadcasting corporation station KFSK here in Petersburg. We are very concerned about the effect of the drastic budget cut, and feel that with that kind of a cut, many of our public broadcasting stations, probably about 10, would no longer exist if this budget were enacted. And FSK, along with many of these other radio stations, is basically the heart and blood of what constitutes these rural communities and provides the information, the news, the linkage with the rest of the world, as well as the communication that goes on within the various communities. For Petersburg, this station is probably the one link that brings people together. It's critical for the public here, not just in Petersburg, but many of the outlying communities who don't have radio, who don't have a communication source, don't have an information source.
almost 70%. It's just unconscionable to take that kind of a cut. I don't know what we would do without public radio and public television. Please reconsider, and thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Is Ketchikan online with Carla Potter?
Hi, my name is Carla Potter. I'm an artist residing and working in Ketchikan. I want to pitch in favor of keeping all funding for the Arts and Humanities Council. The council provides me with many opportunities to pursue my artistic career, and there's so many things. Arts are just entertainment. They're also big business, and I bring income into this community from outside of the state with my work, as well as keeping a lot of local dollars here. The Arts Council also supports many programs that provide good, wholesome, drug-free entertainment for my family. This is very important to me. The arts are very enriching and for our culture. And another aspect that I think hasn't been touched on too much is the educational programs that the Arts Council supports, the artists in school. With arts education virtually eliminated at the elementary level, this program is vital for the youth of our community. Many times, it's the only exposure these children get to a quality arts experience. I feel that the fact we have to fight so hard to preserve arts funding is symptomatic of a lack of arts education in our schools. The arts are disciplined just as math and science are. To fully understand, appreciate, or utilize the arts, a person needs education in the use of the visual language. Just as when we appreciate the beautiful sound of a foreign language, we can only fully understand its full meaning with in-depth study. So it is with the arts. Don't foster arts illiteracy. Fully fund the Arts Council. Increase arts education. Instill state income taxes. I also rely heavily on public radio and TV. I support them annually with membership fees. We need more revenue. Be responsible, not ignorant. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Tom Fouts there?
Yes, he's approaching the mic.
Since our country's inception, it's Tom Fouts and Ketchikan. Since our country's inception, communication and dissemination of news and information have been one of our country's priorities. Our forefathers felt that communication was important enough, even in an impoverished nation, for them to subsidize the U.S. mail for newspapers. They did this to ensure all citizens would be informed, whatever the cost. We are now in the age of instant communication. We have made tremendous strides in bringing the family values to the furthest corners of the Alaskan push. Through public broadcasting, we have given a head start to all our youth. Cultural, social, caring values have been brought to an apathetic youth in all our cities and our villages. Through Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers, and other focused programming, how many youths have been saved from prisons? If you look at Native cultural awareness in 1965 as opposed to now, and juxtaposed with alcoholism, it is abundantly clear we are saving lives, keeping people out of jail and prison, and engendering cultural pride. Another benefit to all of Alaska is the awareness of the rich cultural diversity of our state. What am I saying? Culture and communication are cheaper and more rewarding than prison. Either way, we pay for it. We cannot afford to cut public broadcasting and the arts. As a reflection, if I'm stuck with a commercial radio in a place like Ketchikan, where our media is pretty much controlled by the Louisiana Pacific Ketchikan Mill, we have a monolithic political approach to life. And basically, we either listen to Rush Limbaugh or we have nothing at all. And one more reflection. When I drive around here, I look at our gravel and rock pits, and I see the alternate to the arts as the gravel pit art, trash, glass, and spent cartridges. Yeah, we are out here. Don't let Alaska go backward. Please read yourselves, your constituents' testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fouts. Is Karen Peterson there?
Karen had to leave. That will be the end of the testifiers for Ketchikan.
Okay, thank you very much. If we go back to Fairbanks and Bob Shefik. Shefik?
Mr. Shefik and Mr. Newton have left. Our next person up is Ronnie Epperson.
Okay, Mr. Epperson?
Yes,
Yes, I'm Ron Epperson. I'm the current superintendent of the Fairbanks Correctional Institution, so I'm about to say may show a bias of self-interest. So I want to talk about two areas. One was the Department of Corrections, Fairbanks Correctional Institution's cut, and the education coordinator, as well as the correctional officer, three positions. The next one would be the labor standards and safety in the Department of Labor cut, and the mechanical inspection and inspector position for electrical and dental inspectors. To begin with, the corrections department had mandated this year that the institution maintain a maintenance budget, which we submitted here in the local facility or area. Additionally, what we are seeing, though, is a population increase of prisoners, where our population here is 198 prisoners. Last week, we had 241 prisoners. Well, when we start talking about prisoners' incarceration, the things we are concerned about is the words of habilitation versus rehabilitation. They have to go hand in hand. Also, recently, there has been the submission of a no frills bill. And in that no frills bill, it's encompassing the education emphasis to keep people out of our correctional facilities, and cutting of the education coordinator position would be directly impacted by this particular bill and our ability to perform our duties and tasks in our institutions. There's also the get up on crime issues that are occurring. We also, the Department of Corrections is currently fighting or working with the court system and other judicial groups in dealing with the area of Cleary court case, where we're talking about parity in female prisoners and access to programs in correctional facilities. Over the last 4 years, the Department of Corrections, or Fairbanks Correctional Institution, has lost seven positions and additional cuts of the education coordinator and correctional officer three position, which is a supervisory level, would greatly impact our ability to provide security. We also are concerned about the juveniles coming in our system. Currently, Fairbanks has five juveniles under the age of 18 incarcerated, and so their needs are going to require being met here in the future. We feel that with the prisoner population increasing and staff decreasing, we're going to have a problem in maintaining our security and protection of the public goals. I believe the superintendent should be given the flexibility of maintaining their vacancy factors, which would cover these two particular positions, thereby not creating a situation where permanent full-time employees would have to be laid off from our institution. The other area is the area of under Department of Labor. We have concern about the scenario given that there is a push afoot to eliminate the boiler and pressure vessel inspector, electrical inspector's position in Fairbanks. Eliminating these two positions may eliminate some expenses of the department, but to what expense and safety do we live at as far as the effects on the interiority? Recently, the institution at Fairbanks Correctional Institution had a need to call upon the pressure vessel inspector to come in and look at our facilities because we had cracks in our one of our two boilers, thereby creating a life safety concern and the possibility of evacuation of these 200 plus prisoners. Matt, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Epperson. Matt Atkinson?
Matt Atkinson, Mike Fox, and Washington, is our next person is Hilda Melchior.
Okay, Hilda.
Good afternoon, gentlemen and Ms. Brown, and thank you for holding this hearing. My name is Hilda Melchior. I have been a resident of Alaska since 1959. During this time, I've observed good and bad happenings in the state. But the worst I've seen is what you're proposing to do now. Your proposed cut is cutting into the foundation of Alaska's infrastructure. There are monies to fund programs. The fiscal gap is as much a myth as the moon is made of green cheese. Interest from the reserve account should not be invested to make more money, but instead should be invested in Alaskans. All Alaskans, and that includes our dedicated state workers who are Alaskans too. These people need support. By cutting the Arts Council, by cutting public radio and TV, by refusing to fund fairly bargained contracts with state workers, by cutting corrections and crime prevention programs, by cutting health, safety, and treatment programs, you're declaring war on Alaskans. I thought our duly elected legislators were sent to Juneau to serve Alaskans. please reconsider your draconian proposals by restoring the cuts and pay for them with the interest from the reserve fund. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next in Fairbanks? Carolyn Rober?
Next person is Joy Morrison.
Joy Morrison. Go ahead, Joy.
Good afternoon, Kevin Henry and committee members. My name is Joy Morrison. I'm a journalism professor at the university here. I appreciate the presence of those of you who are there, and we note the absence of our representatives, Kelly and Dirio, today. I hope that you there in Juneau appreciate our presence, the people who have been here since 9 o'clock this morning. I'm a grateful supporter and a contributor to our public broadcasting system. We are blessed with an excellent non-commercial news broadcast in this country. And we in Alaska have developed an equally excellent non-commercial broadcast system of which we should be very proud and very protective. Public radio is a lifeline to so many in the state, and not just folks in the rural areas. I cannot imagine how isolated I would feel without objective news on public radio in the morning and public television in the evening. I stress the word objective, not controlled by private commercial interests, as your legislation proposes. Not only a lifeline, it's also connectedness and a cost-effective educational tool. The public broadcasting here in Fairbanks is a training site for our 100-plus journalism students. Our students have worked at KUAC since its inception. Zeroing our public broadcasting will directly affect our ability to train our legislators. You have a responsibility to protect this objective news lifeline, something legislators have been doing since 1967. This three-year phase-out is just plain bad legislation, as is all politically motivated legislation. I wonder whether some of you really believe that this phase-out will benefit Alaska. Representative Coring, where are all the supporters of your proposal to phase out and privatize public broadcasting? I don't see any in this large group here in Fairbanks, and I don't hear many in the other sites. Nor did I hear support for similar proposals since 1992, when Republican representatives in Washington began this crusade against public broadcasting. Committee members, please listen to the Alaskan people who you represent. People like us here, who take the time and the trouble to do our part in the democratic process. This legislation will do tremendous long-term harm to our state, long after you all have gone from Juneau. This is a real case of cutting off our noses despite our faces. Find a way to fund our public broadcasting system. We will support you. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would just note that Representative Terrio and Kelly are both here and have been here most of the day, and in fact most of the legislators on the Finance Committee anyway have been here. A few have been in and out for bathroom breaks, etc., but we still have Representative Drusendorf, Coring, Parnell, Martin, myself, Representative Kelly and Representative Terrio. Representative Brown stepped out a few minutes ago, and Foster and Mulder were here as well, and Representative Navarre is participating from Kenai. So both the Fairbanks members have been here, other than a few short breaks, I guess, for bathroom duty the whole time. Next in Fairbanks is Jane High there.
No, sir, she's had to leave. Our next person is Betsy Turner Brogren.
Okay, and before Betsy starts, I'll just let people know we have a number of people left to testify, although we are getting down. Most of the people are in Anchorage and Fairbanks that have the largest numbers. There's a few people in scattered areas around the state as well. We're trying to make sure we get around the state, different areas, as well as get to those areas that have the biggest list. We'll continue here for a while. I think we have a number of people here in Juneau as well still ready to testify. So we're going to continue as long as we need to. I think the teleconference we can stay on for at least another hour, and I think we should be able to clear up the teleconference within that time, so anyone that can stay, I would say we'll try and get to you as soon as we can. So again, if people could be brief, we can get through the whole list here and give everyone an opportunity to testify. Betsy?
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Representative Cadley and Foster, members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Betsy. I've been here since 9 o'clock this morning, and just wanted to note to you that there are a huge number of people across the state taking the responsibility to participate in the democratic process. I believe nearly 50 people have been here, and most of the people that left did write testimony. I urge you to write your testimony. Listening to the public testimony today from people throughout Alaska, I've heard strong and nearly unanimous opposition to the proposed cuts to our state budget. I do not hear public support for the legislative majority's plan to balance the state budget through cuts to state services. I hear the people of Alaska voicing support for funding such public services as public education, people transportation, the arts and arts education, public broadcasting, health and social services to the most vulnerable members of our community, the disabled, the elderly, women, children, and families in need. I hear Alaskans voicing opposition to the allocation of state resources in a way that establishes as a priority giving individual Alaskans $1,000 and more in permanent fund dividends and simultaneously gutting state services. I hear Alaskans urging the state legislature to look to such additional revenue sources as state income taxes, state sales taxes, and portions of the earnings of the permanent fund, directing these revenues to the support of state services. Respectfully, I urge the State Finance Committee to acknowledge the public testimony and to modify the proposed budget accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you. Who would be next in Fairbanks?
The next person would be Rocky Cady.
Go ahead.
Good morning or good afternoon. My name is Rocky Pavey. I'm a furnace man here at Fairbanks, and I'm here today to voice my concern about what seems to be a plan to do away with the state border pressure vessel inspector and the electrical inspector here in the Fairbanks office and move those positions to Anchorage. It just seems like this is one more step in a long exodus of high-paying state jobs that migrated from Fairbanks to Anchorage. And as a furnace man in Fairbanks, I'm particularly worried about these two particular cuts. Being out in the field all winter long, as you know, it does get cold here in Fairbanks, and I stay busy in a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest trying to take care of some of these furnaces up here. And accordingly, I have an opportunity to see many different furnaces and boilers, and I know firsthand what can happen when there is no inspection done on many of these boilers up here. The results can be extremely catastrophic. Every building and residence up here that has a boiler has a potential bomb waiting in their house. And without the proper inspections performed by the state inspector, the results can be extremely devastating. The state boiler inspector's job is to inspect the pressure vessels where commerce is, and these are the buildings that your families live in or go to. These are the stores, the retail stores, the grocery stores, the furniture stores, places where large numbers of people congregate. And without adequate inspection, you're more or less rolling the dice with the safety of the public out there. I would strongly urge you to reconsider moving the doing away with the pressure vessel and electrical inspector's jobs and leaving them here in Fairbanks where they can do their work properly and continue to ensure the safety of the public out there, because it's not going to go away. You can't stick your head in the sand like an ostrich and pretend that you don't have a boiler, pretend like nothing's going to happen, because eventually something will happen, and it will be catastrophic when it does happen. I strongly urge you to reconsider your plan and leave the inspector's jobs here in Fairbanks. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Pavey. Who is next in Fairbanks?
Yes, two people left to testify.
Okay, Don Gray, go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Don Gray, 399 Hillside Drive in Fairbanks. I'm a member of the Alaska Mental Health Board, and I'm going to be trying to speak with many different hats, as many of us here in Alaska, we wear a lot of different hats. As Alaska Mental Health Board member, I want you to note that we're the body responsible for making recommendations to the Alaska Mental Health Trust for the mental health beneficiaries. In terms of budget, and we support the governor's proposed budget with the exceptions that we've already noted to the House Finance Subcommittee. We note that in this latest version, $453,000 has been cut as far as BRUs from the mental health budget, and another over $2.5 million in terms of general funds for everything from foster care, Medicaid facility, and Medicaid non-facility, which is matching monies, and monies under public health assistance. Our subcommittee is going to be meeting at doing a site review at Alaska Psychiatric Institute Tuesday, which is the only state-funded mental health facility now. Currently has wings that are units rather that serve mentally disturbed youth. those who are under long-term care, particularly the closure of the Harborview facility. And I noticed that you're cutting $98,000 out of administration there, that we don't consider that a thrill at all. Okay, wearing another hat as a citizen here, my wife and I moved here 26 years ago. I'm currently a stockbroker. She's a teacher. And personally, we think we've been snookered into a Baker Man, Rob Peter to pay Paul budget. I mean, we have state oil revenues that rival countries in the Middle East. When you tell us that we can't afford state troopers without cutting the State Arts Council, that's House Legislative Intent Number 192, I find it remarkable that 8 of the 9 members of the House Finance Committee majority come from the Anchorage Metroplex or Greater Fairbanks areas, and you're, I guess, excused for zeroing out the Rural School Vocational Ed Program, RSVP, on grounds there are no constituents there. But I guess that means that we just have to come up with more money. I think it is important in that particular case for rural Alaska. Well, my wife and I are paying federal income taxes this year. They're about what a state representative makes. So you can either interpret that as you guys are not getting paid very much or I'm paying too much. But in any event, we're either going to have to tax Uncle Arco more or myself and those of us who in the governor's budget are called higher income Alaskans, that is, raise taxes for couples making more than $70,000 or for single people making more than $50,000, have tax increases on tobacco, alcohol, and motor and marine fuels. Those are the kinds of things that we're willing to pay. When I came to Alaska, we had a state income tax that was based on federal income tax. It was fair. You made more money, you paid more. You made less, you paid less. And also, more importantly than that, besides being fair, it was an important bond between tax-paying citizens and their elected representatives. It's always been true, no taxation without representation, but if you have no taxation without representation, likewise, no representation without that link, paying our own way, making our own choices, that is, taxes are a very important connection. Otherwise, you know, who do you listen to? The big donors? Thank you very much, and we'll pass this message on. My wife had a letter here, and that concerned public television. We'll just send it down to you. She's a teacher, and she's concerned with being able to produce citizens in a democracy, having access to education or having access to information. And most commercial radio TV stations focus on entertainment, not on the information function needed to maintain democracy. So without that, I think we're going to be pretty quite a bit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. And who is the last person there in Fairbanks? Don Lynch, go ahead.
My name is Don Lynch, and I'm last but not least. I'm a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and currently president-elect of our faculty senate. I want to draw your attention to certain aspects of our statewide university that I hope you will bear in mind as you consider university funding. First, and very uniquely, under Alaska's constitution, the University of Alaska is responsible for all publicly supported accredited post-secondary education in Alaska. As to my knowledge, no other university in the country has this broad responsibility. What it means is, with the exception of two small colleges and two religious schools, we are the entire post-secondary education system in this state. Or in other words, we do one institution, but all the public and private institutions perform in the state of California. Secondly, we're a land grant, sea grant, and stateside institution. As a consequence of which, we bring in about $90 million a year in research funding. And this supports critically needed research on fisheries, on the Arctic, on forestry, on agriculture, mining, and as well as long-distance communication. We are the premier northern research university in the United States. We are one of only three such universities in the entire world. Thirdly, perhaps of significance to those of you who think in terms of economic development, for every dollar the university receives from the state, it generates another $2 in research monies, tuition, and fees. But without the state money, the other sources of income simply will not exist. Think of it this way.
For every dollar the state spends on our universities, it gets in return an additional $2 for its economy. Most of the 30,000 people associated with the university are Alaskan residents, and their money by and large stays within Alaska. What this means is that the $169 million the state gives to the university translates into $442 million, which in turn translates very easily into $1 billion of economic activity. The university contributes to our basic industries, which are major tourist attraction. Its museums and its libraries and its conferences draw people from all over the world. I want to just finish with one thing. If you don't want a second-class university, then I can tell you you're going to get it. Plans afoot to handle potential budget reductions will turn us from a first-class to a second-class place. We will no longer be competitive in our global economy. I'd like to stress one final point. Remember, the second is nowhere, and it's as true in sports as it is in higher education. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is Jackie Emily and Kenai?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Jackie Emily, and I'm a resident and a principal of Sears Elementary in Kenai. I've lived in Alaska for 24 years, and I've been in education for that long. I'd like to speak to what I've seen happening in education in the past 9 years. I've seen a real decline in support for public education, and along with that, in an increase in the burden that society puts on public schools. I've heard quoted many times, public schools just aren't doing their job. During that time, society has increased dramatically in its level of ills, poverty, abuse and neglect of children, violence, chemical abuse, family problems complicated by all the above, a high divorce rate, and high rate of alcohol consumption. The result of all these societal problems comes to school in mass every day, and we call them children. Because public schools are the only place where children come every day, we are a locus of advocacy for them. And I'm speaking as an advocate for young children. The school in which I work is kindergarten through second grade. In the past 9 years since I've been there, I have an intimate, ongoing relationship with the Division of Family and Youth Services regarding abuse and neglect of young children. We have a high poverty rate. 30% of our students are on free and reduced lunches. We qualify for an elementary school counselor because of that high rate of poverty. And yet, the quality of our school district, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, has been very high. In the school in which I work, we have high-quality teachers, as is evidenced by 70% have a master's degree. They're committed to working through young children, through putting in long hours. And yet we have seen a decline in funding, and our district has experienced an increase in budget cuts. We started cutting the fat in 1987, and we moved on to pledge. Now we're cutting the bones of our budget, and that includes jobs. I think that education with a cut in teachers is like a cart with no horse. It doesn't go anywhere. One thing that's happened in the past is that we have eliminated a state tax and given resident student tax. Gradually or immediately since that happened, our state has developed a gimme attitude. We've seen an increase in private schools and homeschools so that parents can have lower class size, which could be positive. And yet, if that continues, the children that will be left will be the children who are in poverty and can't afford private schools, and the cycle continues. They are the children that need support the most. Our school, for the past 3 years, has had a cash injection from the state. We wrote a grant for $200,000 a year and did some school reforms to lower class size. We have seen some dramatic changes as a result of a cash injection. Since I've been at this school, the raw materials have changed. We had 160 kindergartners come into our school last year.
half of which are low-language children. They are not bilingual. All businesses require money to increase and maintain quality. Schools are no different. A cash infusion into education, which would include accountability and reform, would show a gradual but positive change in Alaskan society. Some of this change is measurable and some is not. Ernest Boyer in The Nation at Risk compared cash injection into Head Start with lower poverty levels, lower prison rates, lower welfare dependency, and higher job rates, children who have had a good start. There is money available, $18 billion in the permanent fund, which has earned $151 million in January in the stock market. I think we've overlooked the increase in the stock market. Why not put that money into children and the things surrounding them that affect their future? It's also our future. By implementing a state tax, we would put responsibility of the residents back on the residents for their own children's education, and we would diminish the non-residents who live outside but earn their money here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jackie. Is Richard Warrington still there?
Yes, I am.
If you could go ahead.
Yeah, Richard Warrington, I'm representative of all the brain injuries around the state. I got stuff like having a budget cut on the arts, where the art is something the brain injured are all could use for self-expression and healing from their disability. Well, by that way, then on education, with the budget cut on education, there's lack of education for the brain injured, because not everybody knows what the brain injured needs. It's different. Brain injury is different than the chemical mentally ill. They need different assistance. I got a bunch of different things I'm trying to share with the states on that. I even got that legislation update from the federal and state level that all the communities could assist. Me and the other survivors, getting Senator Young, Stephen Murkowski to co-sponsor this to get grants from the federal government. I can't think of nothing else to talk about, though, right now, but it's been good talking to you.
Thank you very much. We have a call in. Is Mark Peters still online? It's been a while. Mark Peters. How about John Gill and Nana?
Yes, this is he. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Gill.
Okay, three quick ones. We would like to lend our efforts to get single-site funding. It was removed by Representative Bundy's insistence, I guess, into an area that I think that was on House Bill 230. We'd like to see the thousands of hours and travel back and forth. You know, in my knowledge, the last 9 years has gone on trying to get permanent funding for single sites, and they still don't have it. The second thing is our rural school vocational program. We are unique here in Nevada. We have a program running out of Fairbanks. We're serving 11 districts at this time. We're serving a lot of young people who would be at risk that are graduating with an opportunity to go into the vocational areas, those that don't wish to go on to further education at higher institutions of education. We also would like to, as many other people have testified, we'd like to see some other method of gaining funds for the state other than just cutting the $70 million out of the educational program. Many other programs, health and social services, fish and game, public safety, natural resources, administration, community and regional affairs. If it takes a small personal income tax or some money from the permanent fund, I think most of the citizens of Alaska would rather see that than see the educational fund cut drastically, because I think the statistics have showed us in the past that for every dollar we spend in public education and getting quality education for our young people of Alaska, we save about $3 to keep them out of jail and buying new prisons. That's all I have at this time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we go back to Anchorage and see who's next online in Anchorage? I had Carolyn Lee, but I don't know.
Carolyn Lee, I'm looking at the Tribal Council. I'd like to testify in support of the Tribal Council program receiving even a partial state match. The importance of the additional money is to provide equitable services to the Alaska Native Tribal Jobs Program clients. As a previous AFCC recipient myself, I know how hard it is to get off of the system and stay off. A mother of three children at the time I found out about the jobs program, I was attending UAA self-initiated and faith-made work. I was in need of child jobs program, I had no idea what kind of services were available. Without the child care and additional supportive services such as a vehicle repair, clothing vouchers, and counseling, I would not have been able to go through the needed steps to get off of the AFCC and self-sufficient. State match will allow the job program to assist more clients in their pursuit of self-sufficiency and assist them in staying off of AFCC. Already this past year, the program has had to close their doors to new clients due to lack of funding. This meant putting the voluntary, already employed, or attending school AFCC recipients on a waiting list for a period of months. When the program did finally open back up, quite a few of the clients on the waiting list became unemployed and dropped out of their activities due to no child care assistance. I know that the state jobs program does receive a state match for their jobs program, but are unable to assist the Alaska Native population when the tribal jobs program is out of funds. The state funding provided to the tribal jobs program will allow us to serve more clients and provide equitable services. I ask that this be reconsidered so that the tribal jobs program can continue to grow and promote long-lasting, permanent self-sufficiency.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Ed Earhart, are you there, Ed?
He had to leave. Next, we have Gladys Thompson.
Okay, Gladys.
Good afternoon. I am a retired social worker and realtor, have been in Alaska since 1959. For the heart and soul of Alaskans and our visitors, one, continued support for the Council for the Arts and public radio and TV. Two, eliminate the permanent fund for all who do not live in the state 11 months of every year, except in case of illness, and this includes peacetime military. APF was partially originally instituted to help Alaskans whose cost of living are much higher here than elsewhere. Three, do not cut handicapped and senior services because many are increasingly unable to care for themselves. Four, maintain public defender and Alaska legal services so that those potentially innocent but without money can be well represented when needed. Five, job training is a must for all ages. Six, sanitary water and sewer type facilities used to be available to all residents, need to be available to all residents, especially for healthier bush communities. In this age, there must be a way. Polluters of any kind must be forced to clean up their own messes at their own expense immediately. This includes oil companies, pulp mills, fisheries, miners, farmers, and others. Inspections of their facilities and areas on a regular, at least every 6 months to a yearly basis is imperative. Fines should be administered and collected regularly. Some, if not all, of these about impact residents as well as tourists in enjoyment of Alaska, which helps our economy, and that's the point.
Thank you, Gladys. Is Laura Minetti?
Yes, we have Diane DeVall.
Okay, Diane, go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I've been here since 9. I just got me lunch, but I have a Jeopardy question for you. I'm going to give you a list. Parents, children, babies, school-age, child care, summer care, Head Start, preschool, child care centers, family, home care providers, jobs, program daycare assistance, CCG, dependent care, DCRA, DFYS, CCDBG, RNRs, AFCCA, AEYC, CCFP, special needs, infant learning, school district, respite care, native grantees, university employer sponsored, tribal jobs program, and exempt care. And does anybody know what all that is?
I think
that's budget.
Because you're making up their things that affect their budget. The answer is what are and who are just a part of those who have a role in care and education of Alaska's young children. And for all this involvement and all these people who are doing all this work and trying to make it better for families and children, there is no state policymaking department or agency to coordinate or ensure the most cost-effective use of state funds and the best care for child care, the best standards for child care are implemented statewide. I want to thank you for maintaining the child care dollars when you are able, and also to recognize child care as a support to working families. And at the same time, whatever you're contemplating now of taking out, put it back.
There's too little dollars and too little labor in the state dedicated to improved child care or even decent child care in Alaska. And you've probably heard me say this before. I've been at this a while. I might have been here before with nursing my infant for 5 hours trying to get through this process.